Okay, we're beginning here on the two dots on the top of Samachayim with Aleph. The Gemara says, Tanra Banan, Nisei the Rishon, Velo Yehula Banim. She marries the first individual and does not have children with him. She waits the requisite 10 years, and then we force her to be divorced from this individual. The Sheni, she marries a second individual, Velo Yehula Banim. And again, she does not have children with this second individual after 10 years. Lishlishi Lo Tinasei. She may not marry the third individual. Elo Lemisha Yeshlo Banim. Unless he already has children. Niseit the Mishain Lobanim, if she goes ahead and despite that fact marries the third individual and he does not have children, Teitzei below Ktuba. Then she must go out without a Ktuba. So there are a number of issues to discuss here. The first of which is that Tosfot raises the issue here. If we're establishing that after two individuals there's a chazaka that this woman is an akara, and therefore she shouldn't marry the third individual, why is it only that the third individual does not have to pay her ktubah? Even number two shouldn't have to pay her ktubah because she already established after being married to the same individual for 10 years that she's an akara. And why does he have to pay her ktubah when he divorces her? So Tosafot says that we're going to distinguish between things that are divrei mamon, monetary matters, and divrei isur. We mentioned this in yesterday's daf, that might be the distinction or part of the distinction as to when we pass like Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Tosafot, yes, it goes as far as to say that by Shura Muad, which is a Mamon matter, and we say you need three times, that even Rabbi would agree in that case, because we don't find anywhere in Shas where he disagrees. On the other hand, the Ramban believes that Rabbi does disagree over there, but we just paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So therefore, what the Gemara is saying here is, yeah, the Gabe Isur, the Gabe Akara, and the Mitzvah Purur, we're going to establish the Chazaka after two times. But with regards to the Mamon matter here in their Ketubah, we're not going to allow the individual not to pay the Ketubah until the third time where the Chazakah is already established or fully established. Now, with regards to the third individual, why she loses out her Ketubah, so here there are a number of approaches that the Rishonim take. The Rambam and some of the other Rishonim take the approach that's a Knas. She went ahead and married against the Divrei Rabbonon that say that she's not allowed to marry the third individual. Just like in other cases where you violate the Nisur Derabbanon, you lose your ketubah. So to over here, you're going to lose your ketubah. There are others that suggest over here, it's a case where he waited and was married to her for a full 10 years. The Tosafot Yeshanim seems to favor this approach and says that even by the third individual, she was married to him for a full 10 years. And that's why the third individual doesn't have to pay the ketubah. Because now, not only have we established a chazaka two times, but a third time, and that's why he doesn't have to pay out the ketubah. Although Tosfot over here, and the Ri's approach, seems to indicate that it happened la'altar, that he has to divorce her immediately, and she goes out without a ketubah. And he says it's because a problem of mekach ta'ut. It's a case where he didn't know about the fact that she already had these marriages, or two marriages with other people, where she was already classified as an akara. And therefore, when it comes to this third marriage, it was a mekach ta'ut, and that's why he doesn't have to pay the ketubah. Now, the Ramban over here says that it can't be a full-fledged mekach ta'ut over here, because if it's a full-fledged mekach ta'ut, then he won't even need a get from this woman, because it would be considered a mekach ta'ut, and it was if the kedushim never took place. But the Ramban explains that it's not really a ta'ut vadai, ela a chashashahi. V'gabay mamon, so therefore, by mamon, since it's a chashash that this woman is really an Ilonit, or a woman who cannot bear children to this individual, since it's happening the altar and not happening after 10 years, then a motzi michavera lavaraya, and she cannot get her money for the ktubah. But on the other side, the end is surah, when it's a chumrah, we're going to say maybe she could have borne children to this individual, and therefore we're going to demand that he gives a get, because he hasn't lived with her for the requisite 10 years. Now, if that's the case, then the Ramban says, why is there a difference between someone who has children and doesn't have children? The whole thing should be a mekach ta'ut for everybody because she didn't disclose the information. So Tosafot says, no, because the Braita here is speaking about a case where Teitzei, that Beit Din is going to force the divorce over here. Beit Din will only force the divorce where the person doesn't have children because we want him to accomplish the mitzvah pru revot. Whereas the person has banim, we're not going to force the divorce. Now, if he initiates the divorce, then maybe in that case also she will not get her ktubah because we're talking about a case of mekach ta'ot. Again, a suffek mekach ta'ot, as the Ramban explains over here, therefore have to grant a get, but maybe she won't get her ktubah because it's a davar mamon that is a motzi mechaver olav haraya. Iba iluhu. On this, they ask the question, Niseid l'shlishi v'lo yalu banim, if she marries the third individual and does not have children, can those first two people go back now and make a claim against her? Because, can they say to her, Iglai Milta the Adhu the Garamt? Because now it's clear that the problem here was you and not us, because now you're proven to be an Akara, and now give us our money back when we paid out the Ktubah to you. That was incorrect, because you were an Akara. Odilma Matzit Amraluhu, or maybe she can say to them, Hashtahu the Kachashi. No, I became weaker now. Now I'm older, and I'm weaker now. And the reason I couldn't have children with the third individual is because I'm weaker. But when I was in my full force, and I was in good form, when I was married to you first two, I could have had children. It was because of you that we didn't have children. So the Gemara says, Mistavro Matzit Amraluhu, it makes sense that she can say to them, Hashtahu the Kachashi. That claim seems to be a good claim. And since you can make such a statement, they don't have the right now to come and collect their ketubah retroactively from this woman once it's already established as a chazakah that she is an akara. Now, that claim the Rishonim ask is, if this claim is such a good claim for the first two, why can't she make this claim against the third individual and collect her ketubah from him? The Tosfot Yeshanim, as well as other Rishonim, answer over here that there's a difference, that the claim of Hashtahu Dekachashi is only a claim that will allow her to maintain money that she has already taken. It is not a strong enough claim to remove money or collect the money. It's only strong enough to prevent someone from coming and collecting from her. So therefore, with regards to the first two individuals, they cannot get their money back because of her claim. But this claim will not be a strong enough claim against the chazaka that we've established for her to collect money for the ketubah from the third individual. And so too, if the first two individuals have yet to pay her for the ketubah, she won't have the right to go now and try to collect that money based on this Tana, although the Tana will be strong enough, as we mentioned now, to maintain or to keep the money that she has in hand. Now, for the Rambam, who we mentioned before, says that the reason she doesn't get her ketubah from the third individual is a knas, then so to over here, the reason she doesn't get her ketubah has nothing to do with the claim. Maybe she could have gotten the ketubah through this claim, but it's a knas that she doesn't get her ketubah, and therefore she loses it despite the fact that she has a claim. But this claim will be strong enough for her, or still there, for her to maintain the monies that she collected on the first ketubot, and it would have been strong enough for the third, but because of the knas, we don't let her collect on it. Yibailuhu, nisayt l'revi'i, she marries a fourth individual, vayula bonim ma'od tit be'ei l'shlishi. Can she go back now and collect from the third individual? So if she has now children from the fourth, it proves that she was not an akara. She had gotten her ketubah for number one and number two, but number three did not pay her a ketubah. So now does she have the right to go back and collect from him? So this is the Ri's proof that we're not talking about a knas over here, because if it was a knas, why would she ever have the right to go back and collect it? If it's a knas chachamim, the knas stands because she violated the divrei chachamim, irrespective of the fact that she's later found not to be an akara. Now, Amrinan la, we say to her, shtikutich yafeh midiburich. Your silence is better than your speaking. Dematzi amarlo, because the third individual can say to her, Ana daita dahachi lo gereshtich. I did not divorce you if you were a childbearing woman. The only reason I divorced you is because we thought you were an akara. Now that you've already cleared up that you're not an akara, well, then I would never have divorced you. Now that causes her a lot of problems, because that means that he has now just annulled the divorce that he gave her. And her marriage to the fourth individual was an improper marriage, and the children born from that are mamzerim. So basically says to her, you're better off not making a claim here and ruining the status quo right now, because if you do speak up, it's going to cause you many more problems. So matgiflo rapapa, rapapa has here, ihi shatka anan mi shatkinan. Even if she's silent, how are we standing by silent? Nimtza get batel, ubane mamzerim. If we speak up, and we should speak up here, we're going to annul her get. And her children will be mamzerim. El amrinan hashtahu dibrayata. What we're going to say here is that she became healthy now. And she actually was an akara before. And therefore there is no claim by this third individual to upend her get. And she was an akara then. And that's why she wasn't entitled to collect her ketubah. And now she's become healthy, and in her healthy state, now she's able to have children. Now this answer might also help us with regards to why over here do we assume that number three gave her a get on condition that she is really an akara? The Gemara in Gittin says that we only say about an individual that he has the right to say that I gave the get for this reason if he explicitly states why he gave the get. I'm giving you a get because you are an isha nadranit. I'm giving you a get because of the shame ra that has spread about you. I'm giving you a get because of the mum that's found in you. So if he gives a get for that specific reason, then he can say later on, I gave the get for this reason. And if that reason isn't true, it undermines the get. How come over here we don't have any statement that he explicitly has to say that? So there are some who say, like the Tosfot Yishanim over here, that he did say that. He said, I'm giving you a get because you're an akara. And that would solve the problem. But most of the Rishonim believe that here he does not need to say that. Tosfot suggests that the difference is that those cases in Gitin, when we find out that the information was incorrect, that means that the information was not only incorrect with regards to when we find that out, but also at the time of the divorce. And that's why it would have caused the problem for the divorce. On the other hand, over here, even if we find out later on that the information is correct, that she's not an akara, nevertheless, that does not shed light or change the fact that she might have been an akara at the time that he divorced her, and therefore would not undermine the divorce. And that's the answer of the Gemara here, that hashtahu dibrayata, that now she became healthy. And since she's now healthy, that does not necessarily mean that she was healthy at the time that he divorced her. And that's why he won't undermine the divorce. And that's why over there in the case of Gitin, where Gozer, that if he gets divorced from her, it's going to be a permanent divorce. Whereas over here, we don't have that Gzerah. So that's what leads to the next stage of the Gemara over there, where there's a Gzerah or Takana in place that when he divorces her, it means that he is divorced forever. Therefore, he has to check very carefully at that time whether the information is correct or not. And then we assume that he divorced her completely. Whereas over here, since there's no such takana that he may not return her, he won't be as careful with checking the information. And that's why we would have thought possibly that the Gerushin would be annulled because of that. And that's why over there we don't intervene in order to make a claim on behalf of the husband. Whereas over here we do intervene because since there's no takana that it's permanent, therefore we would think that maybe when he divorced her, he didn't check it out so well. And maybe there is a mistake in this. And to that we give the answer of the Gemara that even here we could have an issue because even if we find out the information, it may not undermine the Gerushin, and that's why we can't make a claim on behalf of the husband because maybe there is no claim over here. The Ramban, and a slight nuance on what the Tosfot says over here, says that the Gemara's actual question is, why weren't they mitakin that lo yachzir? Why weren't they mitakin over here that he can't take her back? Why is it that there is a takanat gitin that he may not take the woman back after he divorces her because of a mum or those other items that are mentioned there? Whereas over here, we don't make such a takana. That's because the mumim that are found in the Gemara and gitin or the things that he's divorcing for are obvious and out in the open. The information is well known. And therefore, he has the ability to check it out or to make a determination about it. But over here, the whole divorce is premised on a safek, on some sort of question as to whether she really is an akara or not an akara, because we can't prove anything as to whether she's an akara. And therefore, it's premised on this Shema lo zachali banot meno. Maybe he didn't have this chut to build from her. And therefore, there's no reason to put a takana in place and say you can't take her back, because there's no certainty in the divorce over here. And that's what leads to the next stage of the problem as to why we make a claim on his behalf to say maybe he didn't mean to divorce her, even though she's not willing to make the claim. And the Gemara's answer, and again, is hashtahu dibriyata, that she became healthy later on, and therefore his claim is not a valid claim, because it could be that the circumstances changed, and since the circumstances changed, it doesn't prove to us anything about what happened when she was getting divorced from the third individual. Maybe she was an akara at that time, and it does not undermine the Gerushin. Hu amar mina, v'hi amra mine. He says it's her fault, and she says it's his fault. Amar avi ami, dvarim shebeino lebeina ne'emenet. When it comes to things that are between her and him, she is believed. V'tai mamai, why is she believed here? He kaimolo biorek echeitz. She can tell whether when he ejaculates the semen, it's done in such a manner that it can impregnate her. Hu lo kimle biorek echeitz. He doesn't have that ability to determine as to how the semen is being projected into the woman. So now, the answer of the Gemara here tells you what the case is. The case is suggesting here that she cannot become impregnated. And he claims it's her fault that she's an akara. And she claims it's a problem by him, that he's unable to impregnate her. Rabbi Yami says that she's believed in this case. What exactly the case is, besides from the fact that they claim that they can't have children here, is, and that Tosfot says, Tema b'may ayri. Ibishata Eser Shanim, if already she was there for 10 years, Imo Lomali Taima Den Yurechetz, why does she need the reason that he's unable to impregnate her? It's already 10 years, and he have to be Yotzi Beitim will force him to give her a get, and to give her a ktubah because lo zachali bono pinenu. And lo shah nechu shema inena tabacher. And if he doesn't wait 10 years, let's just say that she's saying this because she wants to go marry someone else. Her eyes have wandered beyond the marriage. And this is a good way for her to dissolve the marriage without losing her ktubah, is to say that this man can't impregnate her. So why is she believed over here? Or why is it necessary for us to believe her over here? So one way to answer this question is to say that this Gemara goes according to the Gemara Nedarim, who at first said by Mishnah Rishona that a woman who makes such a claim is allowed to get divorced by that claim. And not like the Mishnah Achrona that says that we start to worry about the fact that she might have wandering eyes, and she's only saying this in order to get out of the marriage. Now, the case where we say she's not believed, like that case in the Mishnah Achrona in Nedarim, is only by issues where the husband cannot know otherwise. But if the husband knows otherwise, then she is believed because we have a principle that ein isha me'izah bifnei ba'ala. A woman will not be so brazen to state a falsity directly to her husband's face when he knows that it's not true or he can prove that it's not true. So in this case where he can't answer it, that's why she's not ne'emenet. But if there was something that she says that the husband would know or could make a determination about, then she would be believed because she won't make up something or say something like that in front of her husband that's an absolute lie. Now, that's the answer of some. And many of the Rishonim say that the difference here between this case and the case in the Darim is that in this case it's talking about not only in the case where we're talking about a third marriage, but even a first or second marriage. And the difference is here that they've waited 10 years. And since they waited 10 years, there is circumstantial evidence that there is a problem. And therefore, together with that circumstantial evidence, when she says, she's ne'emenet, because either Beit Din is forcing him to divorce her, and therefore, it has nothing to do with Nana Einei Ba'acher, that she's looking out or she has wandering eyes, because Beit Din is the one who's intervening over here. So that's why she's ne'emenet. Or because of the fact that you have the 10 years supporting her, that's why she is ne'emenet over here, as opposed to the case in the Darim, where she's saying this out of a vacuum. In that case, we start to worry about the fact that she's trying to get out of her current marriage. The other Rishonim would suggest that here the divorce was initiated by the husband saying that she's an akara. And then if she comes along and says that he's in a yurei kechet, she's ne'emenet, because of course, this has nothing to do with the fact that she had bonding eyes, because she wasn't the one who initiated the divorce proceedings here. It was the man who initiated the divorce proceedings, and that's why she's believed over here. As opposed to the Gemara Nedarim, where she's not believed because she's the initiator of the divorce proceedings. There are also those that suggest over here that we're talking about a case where it's a third husband, and she's been together with him for 10 years. So here you can see that at the end of the Tosafot, the Rivam and the Rav Shmuel Rabbi Chaim at the end of the Tosafot here explained that it's a case where she's married to a third individual after not having children with two individuals after she had been together with each for 10 years. And now with the third individual, and the Rav Shmuel Rabbi Chaim says it's a case where she waits 10 years with that third individual. And with this third individual, she's going to lose her ktubah, either because she loses it immediately with him, or because she's going to wait 10 years with him, and then she's going to lose her ktubah. So in this instance, she's ne'emenet to say that eno yurei kechet, and that will protect her from losing her ktubah in this case, even though it will establish a chazakah that she is considered to be an akara, because now she's together with three people, but she is ne'emenet over here to say eno yurei kechet, and not to lose out on her ktubah, because then we have a case of motzi mechavero l'avaraya. So with regards to Isur, we'll be machmir and say that she is classified like an akara, and she won't be able to marry anybody else, like the din of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that there's a chazak after three times. But with regards to Mamon, we won't make her lose her Mamon in a case where she says it's the other guy's fault, and therefore you'll have to pay her ktubah unless he can prove otherwise that it's her fault and not his fault. Amar ihu, ezel intziv itita vivduk nafshai. So the husband makes a proposal here and says, okay, she believes that the problem is with me, I'm going to go marry another woman, and we'll see if I can have children with this other woman. Amar Rabbi Ami, ap bezu yotzi viten ktubah. Even in this instance, he has to divorce her and give a ktubah. Shani omer kol nosei isha al ishto. Any person who takes another woman on his wife, yotzi viten ktubah. He has to divorce the first woman and give her a ktubah. She doesn't lose out in this case. On the other hand, Rava amar nosei adam kama nashim al ishto. Person's allowed to marry more than one woman, many as he wants. As long as he can feed them and take care of them, provide for them, then he is entitled to marry as many women as he wants. And therefore, over here, too, he can marry another woman, and we can prove from that whether he is the problem or she is the problem, and make a determination without having to rely on her statement that he is the problem over here. Hu amar aflat bigoeser. He says that she miscarried within the 10 years, and therefore he doesn't have to divorce her. Vi amra lo aflat. And she says, I didn't miscarry during this period. Amra biami ap bezu hi nemenet. Also, in this case, she's believed. Dim ita de hepilo. If she really did miscarry, nafsha be'akarta lo machzika. She will not want to be machzik herself as being an akara. So if the husband says there was a miscarriage along the way, which would then restart or reset the 10 years, and she says no, we believe her because it's not in her vested interest to say no. Because if she says no, now she ends up being classified as an akara. And she won't be willing to put herself in such a position where she'll be classified as an akara. Hepila v'chazra v'hepila v'chazra v'hepila. She miscarried 3 times. Chuksaga le'nifalim. She has a chazaka of miscarrying here. And therefore, we're going to force a divorce in this case because shemalo zachali banot mimena. It's the equivalent of being there for 10 years. And we need him to move on in order to accomplish the mitzvah of pruravu. So just like by 10 years, we say lo zachali banot mimena and we tell him to move on. So to over here, if she miscarries 3 times, there's a chazaka established. In that case, we're going to force him or demand of him to divorce her so that he can move on and be mikayim the mitzvah of pruravu because shemalo zachali banot mimena. Now here it's clear that the Gemara paskins like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that you need 3 times for a chazaka. The question is, will Rabbi agree? Does Rabbi agree in this case because this woman got married beheter gamur and the chazaka was only established while she was married to this individual in a state of heter, and that's why we require 3 instead of 2 to force a divorce in this case? Or do we say that this is a machloket between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? And we paskin here like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, despite the fact that before we said by Nisuim, the halacha is like Rabbi. That has to do with Nisuim. With regards to Nifalim, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Hu amar afila trei. He says that she miscarried 2 times. Hi amra talat. And she says 3 times. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar, uvda hava be midrasha. We had an instance or a case like this in the Bay Midrash. Vamru hi mehemno. And we said that she is believed. Tim ita delo aflo. Because it was really true that she only miscarried 2 times and not a 3rd time, nasha beniflei lo machzika. She would not be machzik herself as a woman who miscarries, because by saying the 3rd time, even though this will get her out of the marriage, and we could suspect that she's trying to get out of the marriage, there's a mitigating factor here, which is that she's now going to get a shame as someone who is a miscarrying woman. And therefore, she has a vested interest in agreeing with her husband. The fact that she doesn't agree with her husband in this case shows that she must be believed, Migo, that it would be better for her to say nothing and have it be that she has 2 miscarriages and stay together with her husband rather than be assigned by Beit Din to be considered a woman who is a miscarrying woman and have to divorce this man. So in those cases where she actually is going to get a shame ra or a shame because of whatever is taking place here, she's believed because we don't believe she would lie to say these items, because of the negative association with the conclusions from what she's saying. And that's true by the case of the 3 miscarriages, as well as the case where we weren't sure if she miscarried during the 10-year period or not. Because in each of those cases, she's either going to get a shame akara or a shame mapila nifelim. And because of that, she won't want to do that. And the fact that she's saying that it is, means that she probably is telling the truth over here. The next mishnah is Aish mitzuveh piria virivya. Avalo isha, a man is commanded on the mitzvah periyavya, but not a woman. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer, al shnehem hu Omer, on both of them there is such an obligation, because the pasuk says, vayivarech otam elukim, vayomer lahem elukim, pru or avu. It's said in the plural, so the command is both to the men and to the women. Menahane mile, where do we know this from? Amar Rabbi Yilo, mishum Rabbi Elozeb, Rabbi Shimon, amakra, the pasuk says, pru or avu milu et aretz vikib shua. Ish dargolich vosh, venisha dargolich vosh. The man's nature is to go out and conquer, and that is not the nature of a woman. And therefore, the milu at the aretz is associated with vikib shua, to go out and conquer, that pruervu is only a mitzvah on the one who is kovesh. Where it says, adarabba vikib shua tarte mashma. Kibshua, the way that we read it, is a plural, which would indicate that both of them are included here. Samarav nachma yitzak vikib shak tiv. It's written chaser, and then you could read it as a singular word, and because of that, we say that the original drasha is correct. And as many of the Rishonim point out, it's the original drasha that is driving us in this direction. Had it not been for that original drasha, that Misha Darko Lechvosh, the one who goes out and conquers, that's the one who is commanded in plural vu. Even though it's written in plural, we're just trying to answer the problem why it's written in plural, and we say, oh, the k'tiv is written in the singular. But if we didn't have the other reason of Ish Darko Lechvosh, and simply we were balancing between Kibshua and Kibsha, over there we probably wouldn't have made the drasha because it says we keep Shua in the plural. So the only thing this is answering is, why is it written this way? And we answer by saying the Ktiv supports our understanding. But it's an understanding that's premised already on a reason, which is Ish Darko Lechvosh. Rabbi Yosef Amar Mi'alcha. Rabbi Yosef says, we learn it out from here. Ani Kel Shakai, pray your Veh. So over there it said, even though it's in a context where it's been spoken to an individual, to a man, it says pray your Veh in the singular. Below Kamar, Pru Urvu. And it doesn't say pru revu. So over here, when Hashem is speaking to Yaakov, in last week's parsha, where Hashem is telling Yaakov, after he changes his name to Israel, that he should be prey urvei, v'goyo kao goyim yemi mecha, u'melachim echalatecha yetzeyu, since it's written in the singular over there, we see that there is a singular manifestation of pru revu, and it's associated with Yaakov, prey urvei, and that's why we know that it's for the man. V'lo kamar pru revu, but it doesn't say pru revu. So Tosafot says, well, it does say Peruvu earlier in Breshit. So Tosafot says, by Adam HaRishon, that was Lebrocha, and not the Tzivoy. But when it comes to the Tzivoy is only Peruvay. V'amar Rabbi Yiloh HaMishim Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon, k'shem shim mitzvah l'adam lomar davar nishma. Just like there's a mitzvah on an individual to say something that is heard, kach mitzvah l'adam shelo lomar davar sheinu nishma. It's also a mitzvah not to say something that will not be listened to or not be heard. Rabbi Avam Omer Chova. Not only is it a mitzvah, it's an obligation not to say it. Shnemar al tochach leitz penis naeka. Do not chastise the lazy one or the fool because he might come to hate you. Hochach lechacham v'yaveka. But you should chastise the one who is wise because he will love you for that. So you see here that it's an obligation al tochach the leitz, that you shouldn't give tochacha to a leitz. Now all the Rishonim ask over here, isn't there a mitzvah of hochiach tochiach et amitecha? So what happens to that mitzvah in this context? So there are different answers that are given. Some differentiate between a yachid and the rabbim, which is that with regards to yachid, there is a mitzvah of hochiach tochiach. When it comes to the public at large, then sometimes it's better not to say something. Some distinguish between, it's a difference between a person you think will listen to you versus people you don't think will listen to you. When someone you think will listen, then there's a mitzvah of hochiach tochiach. If they're not going to listen to you, then it's better not to say anything because mutav shiyu shogegim v'al tiyu mezidim. And you can see here that this is the third member that we're bringing down from Rabbi Yiloh HaMishum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, and that's why they're brought over here, because the first one was about Pur Revu, the remainder are just because it's brought by the same individual. Mutar lo adam lishnot b'dvar shalom. Person's allowed to change something in order to keep the peace. Shinemar, because it says at the end of Sefer Breshit, Abicha Tziva, kol tomru Yosef anasana. So over there, the brothers send a messenger to Yosef that says that his father said, forgive the brothers for what they have done. Now, even though their father never said anything of the sort, they did this in order to keep the shalom, to keep peace between them and Yosef. So we see here that you can lie in order to maintain the peace. Rabbi Natan Omer, mitzvah. Not only is it something that is mutar to do, it's a mitzvah to do it. Shinemar. Vayom Shmuel, Eich Elech V'Shama Shemol Baharagani. Shmuel says to Hashem, you're sending me to go to the house of Ishai in order to anoint a new king. If Shaul hears about this, he's going to kill me. Hashem instructs him to take a korban and to bring the korban and to say that he's going there to make a korban. So in the end, the Rishonim point out, then he's not lying, because when Shaul asks him what he's doing, he's going to say that I went to bring the korban, which he is doing. But what you do see from here is that because he's not telling the whole truth, only a partial truth, then it's still considered to be lying or changing the truth. And the omission of not telling what he's really doing there is an act of commission, and therefore it's considered still to be a mitzvah to change in order to maintain the shalom, because Hashem is instructing him to do such a thing. That shalom is so great that even a Kodesh Baruch Hu changed things in order to keep the peace. Dimi karaktiv, v'adoni zakein. When Tzara speaks about receiving the news that she's going to have children, she says, how can it be? My husband is so old. Now, she also happens to say that, she also speaks about herself being old. When Hashem reports this to Avraham, it says, Vani Zakanti. He says that Sarah reported saying that I was old. Now, the truth is, that is what Sarah said. But again, here, Hashem's only telling part of the truth. He's only telling the part about what Sarah said about herself, but not what she said about her husband. And therefore, within the context of a Kodesh Baruch Hu and Emet, where Emet means saying everything and not just giving partial disclosure, so to over here, you see that there's an allowance for a partial truth in order to maintain the shalom. Now, in this context, it has to be said that the Rabbeinu Yonah on Masechet Avot says, Midvar Shecher Tirchak, that a person has to be very careful with regards to lying ever, even speaking mistruths with regards to jokes or small infractions. He says is a terrible thing because that teaches an individual that it's okay to lie, or a person becomes accustomed to lying and then he will take it to further and further steps. It is one of those things where Aveira Gorer et Aveira with regards to lying, it has a snowball effect. And therefore he says one has to be super careful not to lie ever. And that means that even in these cases here where it's Midnei HaShalom, one has to be very careful where they exercise this necessity to keep the Shalom in lie, and where sometimes it's better to tell the truth even though it won't necessarily bring to Shalom. That doesn't mean when someone does something wrong they should lie in order to protect themselves, because they have to take responsibility for what they did. It's only in a case where the ramifications of what is taking place will be so great and it'll never be possible for the other person to get the information and be found that this person is lying, then maybe then it is worthwhile to alter the truth slightly, or maybe only in a case where he's telling a partial truth and not a full truth, in order to protect for the shalom. The Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Chaf Gimel Amud Bet says over there that a young Talmud Chochem is allowed to lie about three things, Masechet, Puriyah, and Achsanyo. The Gemara there describes what each of those items are that he's allowed to lie about, but the Gemara there does not bring this instance of Mipnei HaShalom. So Tosafot and Baba Metzia ask, why not? And he says, because those three items that the Talmud Chacham is allowed to lie about there are Mipnei Darchei Shalom, is because of the Shalom. The reason that those are allowed is because they're under the umbrella of Mipnei HaShalom. So Tosafot sees those items as being strong manifestations of the case of Shalom, not being separate cases. There are other Rishonim who differentiate and say that over there, those are three things that a young Talmud Chacham lies about because they're relevant to him and they have their specific gedarim. Whereas here, Mipnei HaShalom might be a broader context and might even be, as we say here, a mitzvah to lie about in order to protect the Shalom. Whereas over there, it's in order to prevent certain uncomfortable situations that would come up by a Talmud Chacham. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko omer that the chiyuv is on both of them. Itmar, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We have machloket amuraim here as to what halacha is. Chadamar halacha to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. One of them says halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, v'chadamar in halacha to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. One of them says halacha is not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Tistayim, let us conclude. To Rabbi Yochanan hu demar in halacha. Let us conclude that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says halacha is not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Deyativ Rabbi Yehuda v'kamar mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. Because Rabbi Bo was sitting there and saying in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Alocha, that Alocha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Brucha. For Adrino, Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yassi, the Apayu. And Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yassi turned their faces away as in to indicate that they didn't believe that that was correct. Vikadamri, Rabbi Chir Ba'ava Amar. That it was Rabbi Chir Ba'ava who says that Rabbi Yochanan said Alocha is Rabbi Yochanan ben Brucha. For Adrino, Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yassi, the Apayu. And again, Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yassi turned their faces away in order to indicate that they didn't think that was the case. Amar Papa, Bishlom, the Mandamai, Rabbi Bo Amra, the one who says that the story was told about Rabbi Bo, Mishum Kvod Bei Kesar. Because Rabbi Bo was an important official and respected by the government, therefore Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yassi, out of respect or kavod for him, didn't contradict him directly, but turned their faces away. So that's why Lo Amri Lei Velo Midei, they didn't say anything, they just indicated the displeasure by turning away. Alamandamai, Rabbi Chir Ba'ava Amra, the one who says that Rabbi Chir Ba'avram Ab Limru Lei Lo Amar Rabbi Yochanan Ochi. Why don't they just say to him directly that Rabbi Yochanan never said this? Why are they turning their faces away as if to indicate their displeasure? So my Havi Allah, what's the din here? Tashma Adam Rabbi Achab Bar Chanina Amar Rabbi Bahu Amar Rabbi Asi Uvda Avakamed Rabbi Yochanan Biknishta De Kezari. There was this incident in front of Rabbi Yochanan in the Beit Knesset in Kezari. Vamar Yotzi Viten Ktuba. And over there he says that he has to divorce her and give her a ktuba. If you say that she is not commanded on pruvuk ktuba mai vito, then why does she get a ktuba? Over here, she's the one for suing for divorce. And in suing divorce, he's granting her a ktuba. The only reason he would grant her a ktuba is because she has a right to demand a divorce. And because she has a right to demand a divorce, because she's nistava in Piria Rivia and she wants to go get married and have children and mekayim the mitzvah, that's why she's entitled to a ktuba. But then if she's not nistava, she should stay together with this individual. And only if Beit Din forces him out will she be granted a ktuba, but not in the case where she sues for the divorce. Where it says, Dilma Baba Machmatana. Maybe that case is a case where they come by another claim. Ki hai da to the kami de Rabbi Ami, like this case where a woman came before Rabbi Ami asking for a divorce. Amarle, havli ktuba. She says to him, give me my ktuba. Amarla, zil, lo mifkadat. You don't have the entitlement to sue for divorce and get your ktuba here because you're not commanded in pruvo. Amarle, misibu di la mati hevi ala, dahach itito. In her old age, what is going to happen to this woman if she doesn't have children to take care of her? Amar ki ha vaday kafinan. You're right. If that's the reason that you want to have children, not because of the mitzvah puravu, but because you want to have children who will take care of you when you get older, then we can force him to divorce you so that you can go and have children. Hayda tada kamei Rav Nachman. There was this woman who came before Rav Nachman. Amarle, lo mifgat. Again, she asked, sued for divorce, asking for a ktuba. He says, you're not commanded puravu. Amarle, lo ibaya hach itita chutra liyodo. Doesn't this woman need a walking stick, meaning a child to lean on when she gets older, umar lekvura, and someone who will take care of her burial and dig her grave? In that case, then we definitely will force a divorce. So from here, in the end, actually it turns out that we actually don't know what Rabbi Yochanan's position is. Because from the story of Rabbi Abahu, it seems like that Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asse thought that Rabbi Yochanan thought the halacha was not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. But then the incident in the Beit Knesset in Kezari seems to indicate that Rabbi Yochanan does believe that she is commanded about Pruvu and the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So therefore, in the end, it turns out that we have a machloket amoraim as to what the position of Rabbi Yochanan is. Rabbi Abahu, who seems to indicate that Rabbi Yochanan thinks the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and case law that seems to support him. On the other hand, you have Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asu say that Rabbi Yochanan said the halacha is not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Brocha, and that case, talking about a case in Baba Betayna, and therefore we don't have any conclusion really about the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan, although that it is a machloket amoraim as to what his position is. Yehuda v'chizkiah to'omim hayu. Yehuda and Chizkiah were twin sons. Echad nigmarat tzurato l'sof tisha. One of them reached full gestation or maturation at 9 months. And one of them had reached maturity or full gestation at the beginning of the 7th month, and therefore they were born at different times, even though they were twins. Yehudit the bitu de Rabbi Chia. Yehudit was the wife of Rabbi Chia, and she's the one who bore these twins. Havalat tsar leida. She had terrible pregnancies, like this pregnancy with Chizkiah and Yehuda, and we're going to see later on, she had another set of twin girls, so she had very difficult pregnancies, and she couldn't take it anymore. She changed her clothing, basically to disguise herself. And she came to ask a shayla in front of Rabbi Chia. Amra, itada mifkida piri rivya. Is a woman commanded with regards to piri rivya? Amra la lo. He said to her, no. Azla ishtaya sama de akarta. She went ahead and drank some sort of medicinal potion that caused her to now be unable to bear children, to be barren. Vasov iglai milto. And then it became apparent that it was his wife and what had happened here. Amala iku yadatli chadka kareisa achrina. I wish you could have just brought me one more set of twins. Damarmar, Yehuda v'chizkiah achai. Yehuda and Chizkiah are twin brothers. Pazi v'tavi achvato are twin sisters all born to Rabbi Chia from his wife Yehudit. And he was hoping that he could have one more set of twins through her, but she could not handle it anymore. And since they had been mekayim the mitzvah pru or vu already, since they had boys and girls, she drank this samo de akarta in order to relieve herself of this tremendous pregnancy pain. And that's what we discussed on Friday's daf on daf samach bet with regards to the woman being the decisive factor when it comes to post pru or vu as to whether to continue having children or not continue having children. Velo mifkide, the women are not really commanded about pru or vu. V'amar Rav Acha bar Ketina, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Maseh b'isha achat shechetzia shivcha v'chetzia bat chorim. It was a woman who was half freed and half a shivcha knanit, and therefore she had a problem about who she could marry. She shouldn't have married because of this dual status of hers. V'kafu et rabavas v'sal bat charin. And then they forced her owner to release the other side that was a shifta kananit in order that she be a bat charin and could get married. So it sounds over there that they're forcing the freeing of this woman, a shifta kananit, in order that she be mikayim the mitzvah peruvu. As we mentioned on Friday's daf, by an eved that's chatzio eved and chatzio ben chorin, over there the Gemara says that we forced the adon to free him because of the mitzvah peruvu. So over here too, it seems like we're forcing them to free her because of the mitzvah peruvu, which would indicate that the woman is commanded in the mitzvah peruvu. So Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, minach hefker na'guba. Here it's a different story because since she couldn't get married, the only way for her to get intimacy was for her to basically become a promiscuous woman of ill repute, and then cause people to sin with her in order to have intimacy with people. So because of her status, that was what was causing her to behave in such a manner. So he wanted her freed so that she didn't cause other people to engage with her in this illicit manner. Rather, we wanted her to be freed and then she'd get married and would prevent the problem from persisting. So it wasn't because of the mitzvah peruvu, but rather because of the problems that were being caused by her inability to get married. Dosavot and other places with the discussion of the mitzvah peruvu discusses maybe even if we suggest over here there's no mitzvah peruvu for women or for shifa konanit, maybe there's still a mitzvah for them of lo tohu yivira'ah, like shevet yitzara, there might be that part of the mitzvah that is still existent for them. We discussed also on Friday, as well as the fact that by an eved kanani who has mitzvah like a woman, what's his status with regards to the mitzvah peruvu? Because he is one who is kovech, but he has mitzvah like a woman, so maybe he's patur. So we discussed the machloket achronim there also, and Friday's daf and daf samach bet, as to what the status is. So there are a lot of ramifications with regards to pru or vu. It's not as clean cut as saying that men are chayav and women are not chayavot, but there might be other levels or nuances with regards to this. And that we tried to discuss on the daf samach bet, as well as when we discussed the main sugya in the Gemara in Psachim. And with that, we'll end the sixth parak, Hadran Allah, Chabal Yivimto.